Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Game, Set and Catch podcast, where I'm joined by Matt Roberts.
Star of.
Internet sensation. Good of you to join us, Matt.
You're welcome. I've just left some of my fans.
He's not even joking,
no,
David.
He's not even joking.
This is the Tennis Podcast with guest star Matt Roberts. David, we've created a monster.
I know. Yes. He's all they want to see, and they want to see him up in lights on the big screen and social media. And
he's just revealed that he was going for another Game, Set and Catch win after Carlos Alcaraz's
His
match
eyes
just now.
Lit up.
I suddenly got really excited. Oh, what if I could make it 2 from 2?
70,000 views and counting that video has got. You find us on site at the Indian Wells Tennis Garden. We're at a little picnic table. We're quite near the big screen. We've got some fairy lights overhead. We're in a sort of canopy.
I've got that one wrong in the past before. I feel better now.
We're under a canopy of trees that I'm unable to identify, and it's all very lovely.
Yeah, it is.
And we're joined by celebrity Matt Roberts.
Yeah, nice of you to grace us with your presence. this lawn that we're sitting on right now with the picnic tables on, this has been rammed for much of the tournament, hasn't it? It's not really been possible to get this picnic table because they've had so many people through the gates, and today was the case again. It was an absolutely packed house inside that arena, and one heck of an atmosphere.
I think on Stadium 1, in terms of crowd, bums on seats inside the stadium today was the busiest day. It's certainly been busier, far, far busier last weekend out and about around the grounds, but a lot of those people would have been Stadium 1 ticket holders that, you know, wanted to get a flavour of what was going on elsewhere and weren't necessarily in their seats all day on Stadium 1. Today felt like all eyes were trained on the centre court. And, of course, there was a final to kick the day off. Barbora Krejcikova and Katerina Siniakova winning the women's doubles title. I covered that, so we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But really the story of the day is the men's final that's been set up tomorrow. The mouth-watering prospect of Daniil Medvedev, the immovable object, taking on Carlos Alcaraz, the unstoppable force. Medvedev having beaten Tiafoe and Alcaraz having beaten Sinner, both straight sets matches, which I think is the surprise of the day.
And neither one of them really felt like a straight sets match. We are left with the final that at the very outset of the tournament I hoped we would see, because Medvedev has been the form player. I think that's 19 match wins in a row now. Alcaraz is Mr. X Factor and electricity, and we're finally going to get to see them face each other, which is just a tantalising prospect for tomorrow. But in terms of the matches that we saw today, they didn't really go as I would have expected. I mean, I keep waiting for Medvedev to come unstuck because of his bad attitude all week, but he suddenly seems to have banished that bad attitude, because even when things were going badly today, he didn't lose his rag. He kept it together. I think he has been teasing and trolling all week long. I mean, I think he has been getting really angry, but I think he's suddenly in that sweet spot now of He's got that out of his system. He's made a big fuss about it all, and now he feels really good.
Yeah, I've definitely been sucked in by his antics and have been expecting him to unravel at any given moment, given just the state of him, the fact that he doesn't like the court, and also I maybe expected some fatigue to start kicking in. You know, this is a lot of tennis that Daniil Medvedev's played in a very short space of time, and yet, you know, I think there was maybe some early signs in this tournament of, you know, maybe some of his antics were a bit mental fatigue, but actually, as you said, he seems to have come through that. He gave a funny line saying ever since he rolled his ankle, he started playing much better on the court, and I mean, he's not wrong. There has been a correlation there in terms of the way he's improved throughout this tournament. And I felt like today was probably his best match so far. Great players have an ability to play the match they want. And I think we saw that for certainly a set and a half today against Tiafoe. It was lots of long, extended backhand-to-backhand exchanges. And that was absolutely what Medvedev wanted against Tiafoe, who has so much firepower and flair, and we only really saw that in the latter stages, and Medvedev just about managed to fend that off. It was a struggle. It took him 8 match points to get over the line, and Tiafoe was bringing it and the crowd was up and it was thrilling, but for a lot of that match Medvedev was in control, and I felt like Tiafoe had these moments where he just sort of looked stunned at some of the tennis that Medvedev was playing. There was one moment where Tiafoe playfully just hit the ball at Medvedev as they passed at the net, as if to say, oh,
go away,
you're that good, are you? And sometimes Tiafoe was coming in and Medvedev was passing him in just the tiniest space available. It was a great performance from Medvedev. I think, yeah, as I said, I think his best of the tournament.
He told us on Prime Video, I did not want to play a third set. That was the first thing out of his mouth when he was asked about the match. He said, thank goodness I won in that tiebreak, because he was really on the ropes there, wasn't he, against an enlivened Francis Tiafoe. It looked like someone had run a jolt of electricity through him, because suddenly he'd found a way to bring his charisma to bear and make the crowd become a factor. And, you know, 7 match points squandered for Daniil Medvedev, that must have been in his head. And had that gone into a decider, Tiafoe would have been the favourite, I think. And by the sounds of that answer that Medvedev gave us, I think he was probably feeling that way as well. I need to be winning this here.
Yeah, and I think because he got so close and played so well mentally, maybe he might have struggled with that scenario of being at one set all. I still think he would have ended up winning, having watched the match on overall. But it was interesting watching it with you, Catherine, for the first set and a half, that you just kept saying, Tiafoe's playing rallies he shouldn't be trying to play here. He's getting into Medvedev's kind of world here. And it was a case of him resting that initiative and saying, this is my match now, we're going to play on my terms, and that's what he started to do towards the end of the second set. He just started to rip the ball, he started to play off-pace balls that could maybe just get Medvedev off balance a little bit, but he took chances. And you mentioned that he brought the crowd into play. He's one of the few players around that is actually a different player when the crowd is up. It's like he finds another gear altogether that is crowd gear, and he pushes a button and off it goes. And it's just so intoxicating to be in the stadium when that's going on. I think that's maybe the second time I've been at a Tiafoe match when I've heard that sort of noise. The other one was the US Open match against Alcaraz. But at the end of that, when he broke back, he was a set 6-5, 40 love down. It had already been 3 match points. Here are another 3 match points, and he broke. I mean, that's just astonishing, really. And Tiafoe, the fact that he won that game and got it into the tiebreak, the noise was one of the loudest crowds I've heard all year. I'm not sure I heard anything louder than that in Australia. And then Tiafa's face lights up and he starts nodding his head towards people, just very slowly. Yeah, this is my time now. He starts pointing his finger at the court. This is my time to take over. And fair play to Medvedev for rebooting. And in his press conference, he's so open about this, about the mental processes. He lets you in. And he said, I just couldn't afford to think about what had just happened, because I don't think he's used to squandering match points, Catherine. You know, he's somebody who usually puts his head down, bang, match point won or break point saved. You know, this was an unusual sight for me.
Yeah, it's a funny one, that the relationship between Tiafoe and the crowd, because he needs them to give him something in order to get himself going, but he needs to give them something to feast on to get themselves going. It's like, who's going to make the introductions here? who's going to break the ice? Mm. And of course, in reality, it's, you know, generally he'll just pull something off, and then, you know, there's a recognition, an unspoken recognition from both that, like, okay, this is the moment, please. Mm. Let's all be on the same page here.
That's why I think Tiafoe at the US Open really makes a lot of sense, because, yes, they need him to pull something off, play that daring tennis that he does. But I think the crowd generally at the US Open is a bit more hyped up from the start. And they just always, well, last year anyway, there just seemed to be an electricity right from the start of his matches, which maybe there hasn't been quite so much here until he's brought it. And I noticed Bianca Andreescu on Instagram wrote OMG at the sight of Tiafoe's comeback in that second set, or not quite come all the way back. And I felt like, you know, there's a player that recognises great drama and, you know, energy when she sees it, and if she's appreciating it, then it must be pretty special.
I've realised today how much this run, this streak from Medvedev, is reminding me of summer 2019. Now, part of that is very personal, that I was in Montreal 2019 with many of the same crew members that I'm working with here for Prime. So you've got that sort of memory jogger, that sort of trigger, if you like. And obviously I was at the US Open with Prime as well, covering that run. But the way it just built momentum, and the way that Medvedev got more and more ragged as every week went on, and him doing anything athletic started to look more and more improbable. You know, there he is on court in the Cincinnati final against Novak Djokovic, being treated for acute lack of bicep, in the words of Hannah Wilkes. But he beats Novak Djokovic, doesn't he, in that Cincinnati final? So, you know, victory over Djokovic, he's got that in common with this streak. You know, it's not, I don't want to stretch the comparisons too far, but obviously his nemesis during that run was the crowds in America. But on this run, it's the courts in America. It's like, I found a thing and I'm going to riff on that thing, and you're all going to bloody love it, and it's going to give me this platform to really show you who I am and what I can do with my tennis. And he's a better tennis player now than he was in 2019. So this one may very well culminate in yet another title. There was only actually one title, wasn't there, on that run in summer 2019, that one in Cincinnati. There were three other finals. There was Washington, wasn't there, Montreal, and of course the US Open.
But he's hanging on a bit.
It's just giving me that. Yeah, feel.
He was having to hang on there to see, could he actually pull this off, because he's got so little left. And here he is trying to win a fourth tournament in a row. It's a lot. It's a lot to ask of himself. And I think that does come into play with his sort of antsiness early on in this week.
Fourth tournament, four different continents, 12 different time
three
zones.
Different continents.
Three different continents. Okay. I thought it was four. Three's enough. Three's enough for that to be a good stat. Today was his 19th win in 30 days.
Mm. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And as I said, doesn't seem to be tiring.
Mm.
In fact, he looked fresher today. I think the early stages of Indian Wells were his tiredness period. It's like a long five setter. He sort of had his energy drop in the fourth, and he's got a second wind again.
And he admitted he had jet lag at the start.
He did, you know, yeah.
That, all of these things, I'm sure, come into play as to why he was so ratty early on.
I mean, he still looks ratty.
But, you know...
That beard's not getting any less
ratty. If anything was going to send him over the edge, it's losing six match points against Francis Tiafoe and the crowd going wild.
But you'd expect him sort of not necessarily to have the mental reserves to cope with that, but he did.
I'd have lost it.
So, all that means that it will be Medvedev against Alcaraz in tomorrow's men's final. We'll talk about that matchup in a minute because I'm particularly excited for it because I feel like it's just not a matchup I know at all. I know they've played once. That was at Wimbledon a couple of years ago. It feels irrelevant
That's to me the exciting thing about tomorrow's finals, in that they're exciting for different reasons. We know what Sabalenka Rybakina looks like, and after the Australian Open final, I just want more of it because it was, you know, one of the great Grand Slam finals. I don't know what Alcaraz Medvedev really looks like, and I want to see it, and we're going to get to. So that's really exciting.
What about what we saw from Alcaraz today against Jannik Sinner? Not the match that I think anybody here was expecting, really.
No, there were little flashes of the highlight reel stuff that we know they're both capable of. There was one extraordinary point which both players sort of turned around in their favour, and it ended up with a lob from first of all Sinner that had Alcaraz scuttling back, hitting a high backhand volley. Then he had to go back onto to the baseline, and Sinner attacked, and somehow Alcaraz arced a forehand lob over his head and onto the baseline. And then he did his signature index finger into the air, fully extended, and then the kind of come on, sort of beckoning to the crowd as to come on, let me hear you. And it was so perfect. But really, that was fairly isolated in the match. I think we expected more of that. I think we expected more winners generally. It was error strewn, and particularly from Alcaraz's side of the court. I thought Sinner should have won that first set, even though he was a breakdown early on. And the big factor that I will take away from this match, above all other, from Alcaraz, that I've just never really thought of him as, is that was a serve-dominated win for him. He won that match by fighting off issues and coming through service games by hitting big serves.
That was something I said to you, wasn't it? Towards the end of the first set, his serve's keeping him in this, which is not an Alcaraz-y thing to say.
And I wonder sort of what Juan Carlos Ferrero would put his serving improvement down as a percentage of that sort of 40% that's left, because his serve was actually something we talked about last year as an area that he could still improve. It's a big serve, you know, he was frequently hitting it above 130 miles per hour last year, but didn't feel like he was necessarily getting all that much out of it considering it was so big. And completely agree with you, today it was, you know, it was the foundation for him, and it won him so many important points. I thought Alcaraz played really well in the second set. I thought he completely cleaned up his game in that set. The first set was, from a break up, really not great from him. I thought he was quite lucky to win that set. It was quite big, why do I lose all the close matches energy from Jannik Sinner. You know, he had his chances there. There was one moment in the tiebreak where, yes, Alcaraz hit an incredible defensive scramble on the backhand, but Sinner just felt like he didn't quite have that killer instinct to take the ball out of the air, and he tracked back and got his footing wrong and missed a forehand. And just in those big moments, Alcaraz stepped up and Sinner couldn't quite match him. But yeah, I think maybe that US Open match, 5 hours, 15 minutes of just brilliance, spoilt us a little bit, and this one was nowhere near on that level. But even so, if that's one of the worst matches that those two would play against each other, there was still plenty to enjoy and still pretty compelling end to that first set. I did enjoy it as a contest.
I have to say, I think it was a huge missed opportunity for Jannik Sinner. He absolutely should have been winning that first set.
Agreed.
Okay, Alcaraz is 4-2 up, but then he pretty much disappeared from the match. He lost 11 points in a row. It was quite an alarming sort of desertion. from Carlos Alcaraz, actually. And had he ended up losing the match as a result of it, I think we'd be doing some real analysis of, wow, it's pretty drastic how much he can just go off the boil.
Yeah,
you know, sort of like...
It was like that, wasn't it? There were periods of last year where we were like, that doesn't look like Carlos Alcaraz.
Yeah, first two sets against Alexander Zverev at the French Open. And I do think that is a conversation we will end up having, you know, because that is a thing that
can
happen.
You can't be perfect all the time,
no,
I suppose,
but it's
quite alarming.
He goes from 100 to about 30, you know, just like that, seemingly. And it's alarming, as I've said several times. And the fact that Sinner wasn't able to make that count.
Do you think he was too aggressive, Sinner? Because when I think of the match he won against him at Wimbledon, he plays within himself and redirects Alcaraz's power. And there's a compactness to his game, which means he doesn't make anywhere near as many unforced errors as Alcaraz, and he sort of draws them from his opponents. And I just wonder whether the expansiveness of his game now, the ambition that he has, that Darren Cahill talked about, to end points more quickly. And it's clear, you can see him doing it, trying to do it. I just wonder whether maybe that might not be him. I.e., he might need to revise that. I don't know.
Yeah, he was certainly on to a good thing before, wasn't he, against Alcaraz. It almost felt a little bit today like he was trying to out-hit or out-play Alcaraz.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't advise that anyone tries that. I mean, the shot-making of Alcaraz is, I think, the best in the world. And Sinner did have ways to cope with it, and yeah, maybe did slightly stray from that. I don't know. Conditions might well be a factor. You know, grass would certainly favour Sinner at this stage. I think the US Open, much quicker court than here. I don't know. I think this was definitely his poorest performance against Alcaraz in a little while. And if he's gone away from what was working, then I'd be curious to know why.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I would be surprised if Alcaraz had a going off the boil situation in the final tomorrow. My instinct is this was his subpar match out of the way. You know, oh dear, someone's had an absolute shocker over there.
What's that? That's fallen
it's
off
a coffee
that trolley.
Urn,
oh dear.
Split into many parts, strewn across the walkway just in front of the big screen. So it's all illuminated. The whole disaster is sort of in Technicolor.
They seem quite amused by it, at least.
Okay. Well, yes. I mean, the cliche is, you know, you always have a bad match in every tournament. If you're going to win the tournament, it's extremely rare you'll do so without a bad match. So I suspect this was Alcaraz's, and I certainly hope so, because I want to see peak Medvedev and peak Alcaraz going toe to toe tomorrow.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, please. Greg Rosetsky on our Prime coverage today called Medvedev a veteran, which I thought, if he were listening, he would find that a real blow.
I mean, he's what, 29? Something
no,
like that?
27? No,
27. Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
27.
Okay, he just looks about 30. Or more. But I mean, he's been around for a while, but I mean, it doesn't seem like we've had the middle ground between next gen and veteran yet for Daniel Medvedev.
Medvedev was OG next gen, wasn't he? He was. He was in the next gen just. Mm. He was the, you know,
alongside
Rublev, Fritz. He was a bit older than Fritz, but this was the class of 2018. Next gen, I'm going to say. 17.
17 sounds
17,
about right.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway. Anyone want to make a prediction for that men's final?
He's 27. That's annoying. you and I, Catherine, we picked Alcaraz to win the tournament. And right at the start of this event,
That's put old game, set and catch over here in his place, hasn't it?
He's quieting down a bit, hasn't he? But I felt as though, I think what I said at the time was that Medvedev looks like he's impenetrable. at the moment, the way he was playing his matches. Everything's locked in. That was before all the shenanigans of the next few days, which really made me doubt that. I did not expect to see him in this final. But the answer to somebody who's impenetrable is Carlos Alcaraz, because he has weaponry that can blow the doors off any defense. And so I think we're going to get a fantastic match. I think we're going to see Medvedev really play well and defend and bring it and make life difficult for Alcaraz. And it's just whether we see today's Alcaraz, which I don't think will beat Medvedev, or whether we see the rest of the tournament's version. Well, the second set, you're right, there is a distinction between today's first and second set from Alcaraz. But look, I'm still going Alcaraz, because I think he's just somebody who rises to an occasion, and I think he's just going to be all over it tomorrow.
I'm fascinated in what Alcaraz does with the return position of Daniil Medvedev, because it's a little bit like the Iga Swiatek second serve. You know where it's going, you know what's happening. It feels like it should be an attackable situation, and yet somehow it's not. Daniil Medvedev is able to stand basically sort of off court to receive serves. But, I mean, he steps in a bit for the second serve, but not much.
How many drop shots is Alcaraz hitting tomorrow?
Well, exactly. And he's able to defend that position so well. His movement is so incredible for a man of his frame. It's extraordinary how he's able to turn defence into attack from such a bizarre position on the court. But I do wonder whether Alcaraz will be able to exploit that in ways that others haven't.
Well, one of the things Alcaraz can do, I think, is, and we've seen him use it a lot this tournament, is vary his position of where he's serving from, particularly on the ad side. He doesn't do it on the deuce side. But on the ad side, he does it a lot, and he has that incredible kick serve that sends players, off the court. And, okay, Medvedev will be standing, sort of maybe waiting for that. Medvedev will be further off the court against Alcaraz than he is, for example, against Tiafoe. And I think if Medvedev doesn't get that return deep, Alcaraz will just hit into the open court and come forward. And I think we might see quite a lot of that. I'll go Alcaraz as well. Must say, just like, you know, you two were very won over by his pre-tournament press conference. I couldn't get the image of the last time we saw Alcaraz out of my head. You know, he was injured just a couple of weeks ago, and it's a pretty incredible recovery that he's made here. And, you know, going further out from that, he's now made, what, three straight finals on his comeback from injury. And he was actually asked about that in his press conference a couple of nights ago after he'd made the semi-finals. Like, did you have these high expectations of yourself coming back from an injury, you know, a pretty long-term injury? And he said, well, yeah, because Rafa and Novak used to do that all the time, come back from a long injury and suddenly win a title, or, you know, reach a final or be sort of back to their best. And I just thought,
such a great sort of, it's not even a humble brag, is it? It's
right,
just a
he
sort
just
of
knows
brag. That's sort of sweet.
That's what champions
likeable
do.
Likeable brag.
Yeah. He's like,
Roger Federer used to
he
do.
He would do that sort of thing.
The sort of, oh, if you saw that written down, it would sound awful, but you're you, so fine.
It's quite interesting listening to our Medvedev talk about Alcaraz today in the press conference. And he did, he was sort of a little bit cautious about elements of it. And he spoke with us the other day, didn't he, here on the show, and about how he will think back to matches he's watched when the timing's right, and I imagine now is that time. But he was very clear that there are things that Alcaraz can do that nobody else can do. And he named some of the other players, the other really talented players, but he was pretty specific. This guy has got something the others just don't have. And he mentioned specifically the forehand, which is hit so hard, but also with topspin. It's not like just that forehand slap that Kyrgios sometimes hits when he's just trying to shock somebody, and that one goes through the air at similar velocity. This is a rally ball sudden explosion from the Alcaraz forehand that has control on it as well. There's nothing like that else in the sport.
Can't wait. I love the I know this is sort of reaching for poetry, but the sort of poetic symmetry of our first real day here on site, media day, of, you know, we recounted that encounter between Medvedev and Alcaraz in the press conference room, didn't we? That Alcaraz had been in first, Medvedev followed him in, but Alcaraz was still doing his signing posters in the corner, and there was a funny little interaction between them, wasn't there? And now it feels like, oh, that was just a little prelude, a little sort of Shakespearean foreshadowing.
Nice.
Right, well, that sounded fantastically overblown.
I liked it.
Me too.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
What's going to happen in the women's final? I know we talked about it a little bit yesterday. Any advances on what we said
it's
then?
It's just as mouthwatering as the men's final. It's just so tantalising to think of what they were like against one another in Australia and to think we've got that again. Now, there's no guarantee that it will be like that. We got slightly let down today based on the incredible levels of the US Open match between Sinner and Alcaraz. I think these two players, though, are going to bring it again. I think it's going to be really good, really high quality. I think Sabalenka will win again. And actually, I think this court suits her better than it suits Rybakina. I think it will suit the player with maybe that bit more topspin on the ball. Rybakina's got the really flat hits. We said she'd win at the start of the tournament, so not going to change now.
I feel the same. No
notes. Matt's like, do you have to keep bringing this, bringing all of this up?
Well, I've got their history in my head, which says Sabalenka. She has dominated that head-to-head. Okay, the Australian Open final was on a knife edge, could have gone either way, but Sabalenka won it. What I've seen this tournament, I think Rybakina has played better. I thought she was stunning against Świątek, so that's one all. If I'm going to use a tiebreaker, I know that Reggie predicted Rybakina, so I'm going Sabalenka.
Oh,
what a burn!
But Reggie claims Reggie claims that what inspired him to think he was, and I quote, ready for tennis podcast predictions, was that he predicted Rybakina to win Wimbledon last year pre-tournament.
We don't have any evidence.
So that would suggest that Reggie, where Rybakina is concerned, does know something we don't. I do remember that, yeah. Mm. His hopeful little face.
I love Reggie.
Okay, well, honestly, two finals that it's very, very difficult to predict, and that's where we want to be, isn't it, going into a finals there. I love that both finals are on the same day. There have been a couple of exceptions, but I generally like the way they do the scheduling here. It's, it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it stood out to me because it feels different to the rest of the tour, the way they've done the schedule here. And their night sessions in particular, the day into night sessions is properly clever.
The organisation here need to be sort of offering themselves out as a consultancy for how to turn a day session around into a night session. There is a gold standard now. Make it so.
They've nailed it.
Make it so everywhere. We got some other bits and bobs of news to bring you. Before we do that, would you like Catherine reads out a disclaimer section of the show?
Been waiting for it.
That's all I'm here for.
Because, as we've been telling you the last couple of days, we have a Roland Garros ticket promotion from Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours. And that is that tennis podcast listeners, that's all tennis podcast listeners, can get 15% off tickets and hospitality packages from Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours to this year's French Open. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast. That's toursfortennis.com/podcast. Click the banner for the Roland Garros promotion and enter the special discount code for tennis podcast listeners, which is 15LOVE. 15LOVE.
All caps.
Here goes, folks. 15LOVE coupon code is only valid on purchases for eligible. Oh, no.
Give it another go, Catherine.
I'm like Shiontek losing to Cornet at Wimbledon.
Let's pretend that didn't happen.
I'm going to start from the beginning.
Three.
15 now. Oh, no. Come on. One take, Whittaker. 15LOVE coupon code. Can we edit?
I can do what you like.
Oh, no. Now you're going to leave in me saying, can we edit, aren't you? Absolute stitch up. Stitch myself up. 15LOVE coupon code is only valid on purchases for eligible 2023 Roland Garros ticket packages on www.toursfortennis.com, made between 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, March the 16th, 2023, through to 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, the April the 9th, 2023. 15LOVE code is limited to one use per customer, not valid on previous purchases, and not usable with any other offer or discount. Your total savings will be revealed when you head to toursfortennis.com, add an eligible package to your cart and enter 15LOVE at the checkout. Not valid on hotel packages or other events offered by Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours or any of its subsidiaries. For questions, please email info@toursfortennis.com.
Well done. And now comes the coughing fit.
But
talk amongst yourselves.
It was worth the wait, I would say.
Barbora Krejcikova and Katerina Siniakova won their maiden Indian Wells doubles title earlier on today.
Their maiden one?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, they've won everything.
Probably the biggest omission from their trophy cabinet.
Wow.
Actually, because they've done the career slam, they've won Olympic gold, they've won the WTA finals.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd say they've won Fed Cup, Billie Jean King Cup, haven't they? Have they won it since it was Billie Jean King Cup? Anyway.
No.
No, but they've won Fed Cup.
Yeah.
Billie Jean King Cup correspondent over here.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I knew I could put Matt on the spot about that.
Knows
he wouldn't
all
hate
of
me
it.
For it. So, yeah, this was probably the biggest trophy missing from their cabinet, and it's not anymore. And they really had to sort of win it in spite of themselves today. And I know this is very undoubles of me because you're supposed to have a no blames policy in doubles, but Krejcikova had to do a lot of heavy lifting today. They were playing Laura Siegmund and Beatrice Haddad-Meier, the righty-lefty combination. Obviously very, very good singles players in their own right, and they've had an extraordinary run to the final as a scratch pairing. But Krejcikova and Siniakova, they're just they are the best doubles team in the world, aren't they?
And by some way.
They were a class apart and very much in control, setting a break. They're cruising to victory. And then Katerina Siniaková sort of falls apart a bit. And they end up in a match tiebreak. They end up losing that second set, end up in a match tiebreak. And, you know, as I've said, they do end up going on to win it. But in the words of Barbora Krejčíková, in the speech she gave in the trophy presentation, that was very stressful.
Can I just...
And that was,
didn't
without...
she say, playing with you is very stressful?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was kind of no hiding it, really. And it was a real glimpse into how special their relationship is, that she can say that and they can own that. And it's all fine.
Can I just say that Matt gave me a look when you said that Barbora Krejčíková was doing a lot of the heavy lifting there, that made me think he's thinking about our golf this morning when we were partnering one another, and Matt ended up having to do a lot of the heavy lifting in that.
Well, we found ourselves in a sort of Ryder Cup match.
Yeah, Matt and David thought they'd put a leisurely 9 holes this morning that they could pootle round the course before anybody else was awake.
In fact, David said the very words as we were in the buggy on the way to the first tee, "This should be our most relaxing golf experience so far."
Enter Bruce and Bob. They got paired with some rivals.
Yep.
And got absolutely taken to the cleaners.
It was a completely humbling experience.
Tell us about Bruce and Bob, Matt.
Well, Bruce is 78 and has had 2 back operations.
Quite recently.
And has played golf a handful of times since last summer.
4 times.
And he was astonishingly good. He was under par after 6 holes.
Yep.
Just making us look and feel like fools.
Yeah.
Bob, I didn't warm to Bob.
Especially when he started kicking his ball down the fairway.
Yeah, and he was moving his ball to give himself...
Cheating, Matt.
He was cheating. Yeah, I called him out on it. Not to his face, but to our Instagram.
Just on Instagram. David
said at one point, I hope they don't have Instagram and check out the tennis podcast feed.
Combined age of
160. I felt very safe putting that on Instagram. But honestly, it was fun. But we got quite competitive, didn't we, David? We felt like we needed to beat them, even though it wasn't a competitive scenario.
And I think that made us worse.
Yeah.
Certainly made me worse.
Actually, you started well, David, and then...
And then I said, we have to beat these guys. Mm. And then I went to pieces.
And then you unravelled.
So, that it really is me all over.
The full unfolding of the Bruce and Bob episode of Matt and David's golfing careers is available on our Instagram, and it's interspersed with footage of me being made to film our opening link this morning whilst on a moving golf buggy. So good times over on our Insta.
Matching vibes.
I feel very at home on a golf buggy.
You love a golf buggy.
That's one thing that I'm reminded of every time I visit Indian Wells. It's, I don't know, it's something about putting my foot down on the... It top speed, 20 miles per hour, but...
Foot to the floor.
You put your foot literally all the way down. Don't you?
Yeah. Maybe it's that.
You get the wind in your hair.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be picking up our Ford Mustang convertible on Monday, Matt.
That's true.
Mm. Oh, my word.
Anyway, we have been trying to make people not hate us for the past 2 weeks, haven't we?
And doing a terrible
I'm potentially
job.
Falling at the final hurdle there. The men's doubles final between Topsy's Wesley Kuhlhoff and Neil Skubsky, and surprise pairing, although very much informed pairing, Rahan Boppana and Matt Ebden, who won the Doha title a few weeks ago. That is ongoing, so we'll bring you the result of that in tomorrow's pod. I can tell you it's Boppana and Ebden that lead by a set. So there we go. Soon to be out-of-date tennis news. We'll wrap that up for you tomorrow when we wrap up our 2 singles finals. Any other business, folks?
No, I think the only other thing I wanted to say is today was our final day of being able to meet listeners here on site.
In an official Steve Fergles capacity.
Exactly. I mean, obviously...
You can still
if you see us around, you know, you can...
Doorstep David.
Shout out.
Turn it back on him.
Whatever. But it's been so lovely to see people from all over the place and different countries all around the world. So many different ages. You know, there's. I love that about the people who listen to the show, frankly, that there's so many different types of people who seem into it. And I just wanted to say a big thank you to Ben, who has taken so many photos. He's from on location. It's his last day here today.
His phone is just filled with photos of us.
He's going to go home and his wife's going to go, yeah, could you do sort of photo cleanup on your phone,
bulk delete. But I mean, he was so patient.
He's
so
really kind. Looked after us, and he's looked after the people that have come to see us as well, because I mean, that he's got a steady hand for that camera work. So thank you to Steve Fergles, thank you to On Location that have brought us here and looked after us and made it possible for us to meet so many of you. They are also still offering the incredible competition prize to Tennis Podcast friends that are resident in the US or the UK. As we always say, we are desperately trying to open these competitions up to our listeners elsewhere, but legally we're not allowed to at the moment. But if you're resident in the US or the UK, you can enter to win a prize package to come here to Indian Wells 2024, which is something I highly recommend. A 3-night stay in a 4-star hotel, tickets to all of the semi-finals and finals, transportation to and from the venue, hospitality, all the fun stuff. And to do that, you need to be a newsletter subscriber. Why aren't you if you aren't already? But anyway, here's extra incentive. Can't believe it's required. But anyway, subscribe to the newsletter.
Threats.
That's in our show. The link to do that is in our show notes. And from there, you need to go to toursfortennis.com/podcast/TTP. Tours, the number 4, tennis.com/podcast/TTP. Tango, tango, papa. I hear myself saying that in my dreams. What a treat. Which leaves me only with news of our mascot for today, Luna. Luna is an absolute beauty. She is a cat. She's owned by Justin. Justin says, my wife adopted her in 2015, 1 week after we started dating. Big days for Justin's wife. What a time in her life. At the time the shelter rescued her, she weighed only 1.5 pounds. To give context, that's about a quarter of a Billie Jean. So tiny, we could hardly feel her when she jumped on us. She was also born with a neurological condition that makes her a little wobbly and uncoordinated. Oh, that's adorable. Instead of the grace and agility you normally associate with cats, Luna is clumsy, can't jump very high, and runs through our apartment like a horse. Which is hard to reconcile, because she looks the most elegant, poised thing, doesn't she, in this picture? She's got that deep white ruff, which is very reminiscent of Magic, the cat I used to live with that hated me. But Luna looks rather more friendly, quite frankly. She's got these incredible green eyes, and she's gorgeous. So thank you to Justin. Thank you to Justin's wife for adopting Luna. And thank you to Luna for being our mascot.
And Justin, I believe we met at the booth
this week. Oh, how perfect. Oh,
good on you, Justin.
Justin didn't thrust a picture of Luna in my face, which is one of my favourite things about the past 2 weeks. Maybe he was saving Luna, saving the surprise of Luna for this moment, which has also been lovely. We have our mascots. David has Maisie.
Right, Maisie, we're on for a big weekend.
I've got Xenia. Matt has got Darwin.
It's Maisie a big and weekend.
Yeah, Catherine and me, knowing looks here. We could clean up tomorrow, Catherine.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We have Celia Rafalco, who is from Richmond, Virginia.
They're all from Virginia.
Richmond, the home of Arthur Ashe.
Yes. Seriously, though, there is a skew towards Virginia.
Yeah,
of
that was
our
me
podcast
saying
listeners. You just said
people from all over the world, but mostly Virginia.
And of course, Matt is from Richmond. Well, not from, but lives in Richmond. Is it weird to give away your? No, everyone knows I live in Putney. It's a big place.
It's a big place.
Yeah. I not that anyone's going to stalk us. listeners. That's not what I'm thinking. Anyway, I had a childhood au pair called Celia, and she was wonderful. And we're still in touch with her. She's from France. And yeah, I have very fond and happy associations with that name.
Lovely. I don't have any trivia anecdotes or tennis players with the name Celia in my mind. So I'm delighted you've come up with that one.
Thank you, Celia.
Cheers, Celia.
We've also got Jim Session from Merimbula in Australia.
Wow.
Don't know whether I'm saying that correctly. Australia. Jim is from Australia.
Cheers, Jim.
Hello, Jim. Jimmy Connors. Do we have a Jim?
Courier. Who I saw today.
Did you?
Believe it or not. Yeah, I did.
To chat to?
Briefly, outside the toilet. He was just going in and out of the Tennis Channel commentary box where he's been doing sterling work
all
week.
Got doorstepped by David.
He can't, no. I didn't have a microphone in hand. We had our hour with
him. Socially doorstepped by David.
Yeah, no, he seemed okay with it. It's been good watching the Tennis Channel coverage, though, hasn't it? With him on it.
Yeah, it has. It's been great.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, more, as much Jim Courier's punditry in our lives as we can get.
Mm.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, cheers, Jim.
And finally, we've got Ishmael Betancourt from Western Florida.
All right, Ishmael.
All right, Ishmael. I feel like there's a tennis Betancourt, isn't there?
Paolo Badosa's boyfriend.
That's who I'm thinking
Is that
of.
Right?
Juan Betancourt.
Yeah, with the arms.
With the... That's who I'm thinking.
With the guns.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our minds went to the same place.
We first became familiar with him here, didn't we? October 2021, weird Indian Wells. A lot of his arms.
Mm.
You couldn't move for them.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Ishmael.
Yeah, thanks, Ishmael. Who quite often emails us, Matt, I seem to recall.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure has had a shout-out before as well.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely.
Great. Cracking memory, Matt. Right, we've got dinner reservations. Who do we think we are?
I can't wait.
Off we go. Thank you for listening. We will be back with one last daily Indian Wells 2023 tennis podcast for you tomorrow. We hope you've enjoyed them. We've enjoyed making them. We'll speak to you then.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.